Old Reliable. That's what we call that rooster, Old Reliable. Every Saturday morning, an Arizona tradition for 26 years, you're tuned in to Rosie on the House, where we assemble a great crew of people every single Saturday morning at 8 o'clock to talk about the garden. At 9 and 10, we're going to talk about your home. It's our goal every Saturday morning to become your best friend. And we do that by informing you, protecting you, and hopefully entertaining you about the issue of your house, home, castle, or cabin. Good morning.
And generally speaking, it's the third Saturday of the month. We're talking trees, but we were at Saba last week, so we switched our lineup. We are joined this Saturday by John Eisenhower, Integrity Tree Service. Talking trees. Welcome back, John.
Good morning.
Hang on just a second. One more time. Go ahead.
All right. It's a good morning to be here talking trees, and missed you last week, but glad to be here today.
And you have a great lineup for us today. We're talking, if you got our weekly newsletter, we're going to be talking about pruning. We're going to be talking about deciduous trees, composting, and some weed whacker prevention, some real life examples you saw on the street this week.
Yeah.
And we also have a very, is a four-page resume, does that consider distinguished?
Distinguished.
Are you now a distinguished person when you got a four-page resume?
Distinguished. I don't know. It's pretty intimidating. No, it's my privilege today to have a guest with us, Dr. Ed Mollering with Arizona Trees in Queen Creek. Ed is a nurseryman and a great spokesman for trees. And I just have enjoyed the last couple of days picking his brain on trees, and I want him to be able to share some of his information with us today.
So, and we're going to take your calls, 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you if you'd like to get on the line and talk trees with us this morning.
I think on the topic of trees, that makes us unstumpable today. We are unstumpable. Try it. You try and find a tree question we can't answer. Give us a ring at 1-888-767-4348. Right here in the garden with Rosie on the House.
And we like to highlight a specific tree each week or each month when we talk trees. What tree are we going to talk about today?
Well, we are going to look at the honey mesquite. Honey mesquites are a unique specimen that Ed particularly is fond of. And I wanted Ed to maybe give us a little bit of information on the honey mesquite, some of its characteristics and why it's a desirable tree.
Well, I think, honey mesquites are unique among the desert species that we're usually familiar with in the landscape. They're very weepy. They look very riparian. They look very lush. Do have thorns. Some of the selections have thorns. Some don't have thorns. But they have a very graceful quality, almost look like a willow or a California pepper. People mistake them for that all the time. I think they have a great versatility, and in some respects are kind of underutilized because we're more used to more formally structured trees. I think what makes these wonderful is they have a very graceful branch structure, very weepy quality, lush.
A little more open branch structure,
much
too.
More so. And because they're day length deciduous, like most normal deciduous trees, not like our desert species, they lose their leaves in the winter, and have that kind of spare, deciduous appeal for those who visited or came here from the Midwest.
Now you moved to Arizona from Brooklyn or Long Island, and
a million years ago, yes.
And y'all landed in Tucson when the population was less than 300,000.
Yes.
And I'm going to all this because last time we talked mesquites, we had some. It came up in conversation that mesquites may not have been native to Arizona, and we had some people call and say yes, and we had some people call and say no, that's not true.
I started the rumor.
Okay.
If you remember. And it was the BLM guy that was giving me a tour of the ranch. And I don't know if he was saying the species of mesquite they were eradicating wasn't native to Arizona, but I took it. He just said the mesquite is not native to Arizona. So I'm guilty for starting that whole issue like I'm guilty for starting most things.
Yes, Ed, straighten us out. What's the lowdown?
Well, As we talked earlier, with the introduction of cattle in the Western United States, nothing was indigenous. But there is an indigenous species. There's a native mesquite in Arizona, and there's native honey mesquite in Arizona. But there are also introduced species and intermediate species because, as we know, all the mesquites tend to sort of interbreed. But no, there is a native mesquite and there's a native honey mesquite, but there's also very commonly a Texas honey mesquite and a Texas native mesquite that have been introduced over the last 100 years.
And a lot of that due to the cattle.
Moving the cattle west. Any kind of livestock that eats, picks up seeds, and it's kind enough to deposit them the next place they go. It's a nature biology.
Yeah. Those horses love mesquite beans, too. So it's not even just the cattle, but the horses that are coming with it. They have a little bit different of a palate as well, and they will clean up underneath a mesquite tree in an hour.
Oh, absolutely, and as did a lot of indigenous people. Mesquite beans have a high protein content. Some of them are fairly sweet.
So they could travel well. They
exactly.
Could travel with people groups.
So yeah, they all tended to get moved around. But no, mesquites have been indigenous to the Southwest for a very, very long time.
And how many different mesquite varieties are there?
Well, I don't want to be picky. you're kind enough to point out how long my resume is. And so we talk about varieties are different types of selections within a species of trees. And I think really what your question is, how many different species of mesquites are we talking about? Because within each of those species, there's lots of varieties, lots of different types. Primarily, there's four. So we have thornless mesquites, honey mesquites as an aggregate group, native mesquites, and then screw bean mesquite. So those are the ones that you most commonly find available for landscape purposes. Screw bean is actually another indigenous mesquite from Arizona that's not used very much in the landscape. But then within those four species, if you will, not to be too instructional here, there's lots of different varieties and different selections that have different characteristics, different qualities.
Well, something you mentioned was the daylight deciduous. Can you explain a little bit about the two types of deciduous?
Sure. In the desert Southwest, you know, most of our trees are very opportunistic. So when there's moisture and there's warmth, they grow. And so from an evolutionary standpoint, having been adapted here for millions and millions of years, they'll take every opportunity to grow that they can. So you can see with mesquites, Palo Verdes, that sort of thing, as long as the winter stays warm and there's moisture available, they'll have leaves. Typically, if you think about your ash trees, a lot of the elm trees, they're what we call day length deciduous. So they actually have a mechanism for measuring the day lengths. And this is why we all go back to New England for the leaf change. The days get shorter, the temperatures get lower.
And the leaves drop.
And so honey mesquite's one of the few species that we have in the desert Southwest, it actually goes day-length deciduous. And that makes it much more cold-hardy, by the way.
So it's predictable. So every year it will lose its leaves.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that sort of is a prelude to the wonderful chartreuse leaves that they pop out.
So what's the other type of deciduous then? We have other mesquites that might lose their leaves one winter?
Well, we call them, we describe them as semi-deciduous. It's hardly a technical term, but they'll lose leaves continuously until the spring weather kicks in, and then all of a sudden they drop them all at once, which will scare you to death because you think they've just tumped over and died.
Yeah, we have customers calling and saying, hey, my mesquite's dead. Come and remove it. We find out it's complete. I say, well, go do a scratch test. Make sure. Go out on the branches, on the small branches, and scratch it with your thumbnail and see if it's still green. They'll come back. Yes, it is still green. It's just deciduous. It's dropped its leaves. It's getting ready to put on new leaves this spring.
Yeah. Then it can be kind of terrifying. You walk out one morning, they're all on the lawn.
Yeah, it looks like the trees are...
Don't panic. That's the point.
But it doesn't happen every year with those semi-deciduous trees. This is why it can be startling, because you can have a tree fully green all winter for 3 or 4 years, and 1 year it drops all its leaves.
Well, Rosie made the challenge that we're unstumpable today. Let's see how true that holds. We've got calls from Prescott Valley on spruce and Phoenix with lemon and an olive tree. But we're going to start with Brad, who's driving into work, wants to talk about planting a desert Palo Verde. Good morning, Brad.
Good morning. Good morning, guys. I have right now a Desert Museum Palo Verde. It's in a large pot, and I would really love to put it in the ground where it belongs. The problem is small front yards. It's hard to get any more than 5 feet from either a sewer output line, a water supply line, or an irrigation drain line. So how invasive are these roots? Do I need to worry about it? If it's that close, you're going to have problems for sure, because my neighbors seem to be pulling it off.
Your neighbor seems to be able to do that?
Yeah, they've had Palo Verdes in their front yard right by their water main box for 20 years and never had a problem. And I just have a feeling if I put anything in, I'm going to inevitably have someone tell me, well, your root system caused a leak. Are Palo Verdes a common source of problems with getting into sewer lines or breaking copper supply lines?
Right. Well, as a species, I don't think the Palo Verdes are necessarily have invasive roots. There are some tree varieties that are extremely invasive. Palo Verde as a species isn't so bad, but next to any kind of a hardscape element, you have the potential for roots to get into those in 5-10 years, because the roots are going to get larger in diameter and start migrating out into more soil areas, and you can have those problems. Something you might want to consider is the installation of a physical root barrier. Say you want to go out maybe 4 or 5 feet right at the edge of those hardscape elements that you want to protect. You can simply trench down 18 to 24 inches, put in a physical barrier. They do have root barrier products available. And as a preventive, then go ahead and plant your tree in the middle of those in the spot you want it to be. And then you've set down this protection. It's a root deflector. So when the roots hit that deflector, they can't go any further. Essentially, you can contain the tree within that area and protect your elements that you want to, where you don't want the roots to go.
And those root barriers, that doesn't pose risk of making the tree weak in the ground, of getting blown over once it gets large?
Well, you know, that's something to consider. But if you're 4 or 5 feet from a large tree, that's still a pretty large root plate, 10, 12 feet in diameter. But it's something to, if you've got some areas where you need to protect a hardscape element, it's an option for you for sure.
We're talking trees with John Eisenhower of Integrity Tree Service and Mr. Ed Mulreen of Arid Tree Zones. It's 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you.